Hey everyone, and welcome back to the That Girl Guide. We are doing a part two today on a guide to finding your passions and thriving in your first real girl job.
All of the above.
It can be a real girl, big girl job. So if you haven't already listened to part one, I would recommend listening to that first, because today we will be focusing specifically on career advice and also how to pivot in your career major or in school. So welcome back, Rachel. So excited to have you.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be back. I had so much fun last time, so looking forward to it.
We're honored. And the followers had so many questions, so we're going to start with just very basic question. How was your experience in your very first big girl job? And how do we thrive in our first big girl job?
Ooh.
Big girl, real girl job.
Big girl, real girl job.
Trademarking that.
Yeah, totally. So I talked a little bit in part one about my first job out of college and how it wasn't a fit for me and how I left that job, I think, pretty quickly, if I remember right. So I think the majority of my thoughts and advice on my first real big girl job,
real girl, big girl job,
are around really my first job. And it was after that, and it was in sales. And I worked basically kind of calling on accounts and working with a lot of different people. I loved it. I think what was interesting is that when you hear sales, I think a lot of people, if you're not in sales, kind of shiver at the thought of being in sales because it sounds scary or hard or like you're going to have to do things, you know, have hard conversations or do things that make you uncomfortable. But I think for me, I loved it because it taught me how to deal with everyone from somebody working like at the front desk, somebody who owned 10 businesses, to somebody that had started a franchise.
What were you selling for?
I was working for a distributor of hair care brands to salons. So I was calling on salons, chain salons, and then like the people that had bought the salon. So I was dealing with hairstylists a lot, which I love hairstylists. It's a whole nother podcast, but love hairstylists.
Next part three.
Yeah. Hair. And then, you know, the receptionists. And I think it was just a really great study in the way people work and how to reach people and how to communicate. I had the opportunity to learn from a lot of really smart people, but I will say one of the things that I think was a key to my success in that was that I was pretty hungry. I put a lot of time in to really learning the products that I was selling. I put a lot of time.
I think that makes a huge difference.
Yeah, it does. I think when you can be an expert, when you have an opportunity to be an expert in something, it's up to you to take that opportunity and to do the work to be able to be an authority. So so that was overall a good experience. It was interesting.
And how long were you there?
I was in that job. Let's see. I was in that job for about 7 years.
Holy cow.
Not that exact job. I did that for about 2.5 years. I left and did a similar role for a different company.
Okay.
And then they actually brought me back to become a manager and oversee
a
team.
Hard work pays off.
It does pay off. I think that's like that's one piece of advice or something that I would just a mentality I would encourage people to take is that when you're done with school and you're starting a career, you immediately need to start thinking about every job and every interaction as you're building something, and what you're building is a professional reputation.
Yeah.
And no one can ever take your professional reputation away from you. So if you make sure you're investing in that, and what do you want to be known for? I always wanted to be known for being a really hard worker. I wanted to be known for...
I'd say that's like... I don't know. Maybe I should have thought this through. I was going to say, I feel like that's number one thing.
Yeah.
Like you should be known for, or want to be probably known for it, though.
Yeah,
career,
a hustler, right?
Yeah.
Like, I'm going to put in the work. I'm going to put in the time. I'm not asking anybody to give me anything that I haven't earned.
Yeah.
So I think being a hard worker, I think being a problem solver, being someone who is curious, being someone who's not afraid to have a wild idea.
I'm full of this.
Me too. We talked about that last. I think we have that in common. So I think those are some things that I had the opportunity to define for myself in that first job. So when you get in that first job, even if you're doing something that maybe doesn't feel that exciting to you or feels kind of like maybe lower level than you imagined yourself starting, I think focusing on the fact that you're building something.
Yeah. What are you building?
And what are you building? Yeah. And be intentional about it, because if you're not, then other people are going to decide what you are for you.
Yeah.
And then that will be your professional reputation. So, yeah, I think for me also, like, being friendly, being nice, being personable is just a natural part of who I want to be. And so those are things that I had to be intentional about.
True. I love that. I love that, like, you need to build something. I feel like I had a few different, like, internships and jobs, but my current job was because of, like, where I'm at now, was because of an internship, and I didn't, like, love what I was doing at first. I was basically just, like, packing boxes, or, like, I would go to the mall and, like, buy stuff for them at, like, for their photo shoots or something.
Mm-hmm.
But then...
That sounds fun.
That's true. It wasn't horrible, but it wasn't, like, my dream job or something. But I think, like, I tried to, like, work on building, like, their social media and their influencer programs, and then hopefully, and I think, like, I built those things up enough that I was able to then grow into, like, other parts of my career. So I just love the advice of, like, wherever you start out in your first job or your first internship, just, like, focus on, like, what are you building and how can you provide value there. So,
well, one other thing with that, I think that it sounds like you did in your job, and as I think back to that first job, I definitely also did, is you didn't just check the box of the tasks that they handed you to
what
do.
They told me. Yeah.
You said, where else? What else?
Yeah.
What else can I do?
Totally.
And I remember in that job in particular, I had a mentor, someone that, like, took the time to train me, and she, one of the parts of the job was doing product knowledge training for classes, and at the time, or for salons, for the stylists, so that they could be able to talk about the products to their clients sell more, and then we would in turn sell more.
Yeah.
And that was a big part of the role. But what was interesting is when I started, there was maybe 20 sales reps, and everyone had their own class formats, and everyone was doing their own thing, and it wasn't very... very formulaic or very, what's the word? It wasn't the same across the board. Everyone kind of was doing their own thing. And so I was working with one particular salon chain that really liked things to be consistent and streamlined. And so I started writing classes and making classes.
But
and
no one asked you to do that.
No one asked me to do that.
Yeah.
And then this is key too. I shared them openly with everybody else. And
totally.
And I asked for feedback. I said, how can we make this better? You know, use this if you want to, or you know, riff on it and do it your own way. But I just made this and I want to share it. And something as simple as that made me stand out. And I think opened people's eyes to the fact that I was not just going to check a box and do the minimum required. I was going to go above and beyond.
Yeah.
Because I, that's what excellence looks like.
Yeah. So in summary, experiencing your first job wasn't great because you went to another one, but then real girl job you loved and you worked hard and you also problem solved, which I feel like those are, like, probably biggest advice for anybody listening that I agree with. It's just, like, hard work and problem solving will pay off. And so if you do everything you're asked to do and work really hard, but then also problem solve when, like, stuff comes up or things are happening or, like, your boss is complaining about something or a coworker is complaining about something, like, how can you fix it? How can you solve it? How can you make it easier? Like, how can you streamline this, like, education process? Because that's, I always joke to my husband, I'm like, I feel like I'm just getting paid to solve problems, because that's essentially, like, what you're, I mean, there's a lot more to it, but, like, half of it is just, like, well, how do we fix this or, like, make it better? So, well, this isn't a question someone submitted, but I am curious, because you did stay at your job, like, for a while on, not, like, job hopping, but, like, how long you need to be somewhere to, like, be able to really see something through or, like, say you get it done or, like, work towards something.
Yeah, that's a good question.
Sometimes it takes time, but then sometimes, like, maybe you're just at the wrong place.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Or in the wrong industry or, So for me, I think I've kind of over the years landed on a construct of thinking about that. And I almost imagine in my mind a scale with two sides. And on that scale is learning on one side and offering value to the organization or the role or the client or whatever on the other side. And when you start a job, you are offering almost no value.
True.
And the scale is very much weighted to the learning side.
How long do you think it takes to get caught up on, like, a job to provide value?
I think it depends a lot. I think the earlier you are in your career, the longer it takes to add value in general. But I think you always want to, in the first few weeks or months of a job to try to find what I like to call quick, easy wins. You know, like what's a quick place where you can make a difference. And then celebrate that or share it, you know, in a way that isn't bragging. Yeah. But I think that has been something. And when I think about employees that I have, that I've worked with or that have been on my teams that stand out to me, they always did that too. So yeah. I think it's kind of like set yourself up to be viewed as a top performer. So I think the other piece of that, as far as like how long to stay, I always feel like you get to play the new person card no more than 6 months. Okay, nobody wants to hear it after 6 months that you're new. Like, you've been here long enough to at least know enough to stop making that excuse.
Yeah.
And I think that window actually gets shorter and shorter the more senior you get in your career, because
soak it up.
Yeah.
Your first career, guys.
Yeah. Get it while it's good. So there's that piece. I think, so we're going back to the scale analogy, as you've been there long enough that you have learned some things and you now are offering value, now the scale is balanced. And to me, that's the funnest part of any role, is when you're still learning, but you're offering significant value to the organization. And then when I feel like it's coming to an end and it's probably time to start looking, is when you're only offering value and you're no longer learning anything. Because that's when, in my experience, you start feeling like I'm just solving the same problems over and over again versus different. Like, if you're solving different problems every day, that can still be exciting and you still find a way to love that.
Yeah.
But if you're just kind of on the hamster wheel of resolving the same things, it's probably time to look for something else. So I think that's one way to look at it. And another is, and I wish someone had told me this earlier in my career, if a job is stealing your joy, if a job is damaging your health from a stress perspective, and there's no way to fix that within yourself, and it's really more external, it's time to go. It's not worth it.
Yeah.
And I think I've only left, the only job I ever left really quickly was that first one that we talked about in the last, where I worked for 6 months. And leaving that job, actually, if I hadn't left when I did, I wouldn't be sitting here right now, because that's how I got into beauty, and that's, you know, the rest
is
history.
That's how you are here today.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So I think there's like a point where you kind of have to like stick it out for a second, but
for sure,
it's like you're really truly unhappy and there's nothing you can do about it. Like, it's not, I always say, like, you spend more time with the people you work with and working than you do like with your family, on your hobbies, on your anything. So if you don't enjoy it, then you gotta find something else to enjoy.
Yeah.
Okay. Next is tips for a good first interview and or impression. Just like walking into a room, getting on a Zoom call, tips, tricks.
Yeah. I think sometimes maybe we overcomplicate this one. I think it's, you know, coming in looking the part of whatever.
Dress for success.
Yeah, dress for success. Exactly. I think there's that.
And also, I would always say overdressed, don't you think?
Absolutely. Like, no one's ever going to say they came in too formal. I think,
if you're ever deciding between two, go with the nicer.
Yeah, and also go with the more professional. Like, I think I've seen some interesting things in interviews. I think being well-groomed, whatever that means to you, if it's, you know, like not having chipped nail polish. You don't have to have your nails done, but don't have, you know, 3-week-old nail polish on your nails.
I think it's, my nails,
your nails look great. So I think that's a real, really simple thing. But I think the more important things than, because first impressions do matter. I think that not having any dings against you in that area to distract people from what you're really there to talk about, which is the value that you're going to add.
Yeah.
The more confidence that you can bring to an interview, whether you really feel it or not, the better. I think eye contact, I think a
firm... True. Eye contact, I feel like, is so overlooked these days.
Yes.
And like with social media and Zoom, like even I find myself like making eye contact less than I used to, but it's like, anyways, I just think like if you're evasive, especially in an interview and not looking at someone, you seem not confident in what you're talking about.
Yes. And then they're immediately going to wonder if you know how to do the job.
Yeah.
You just don't want to give people a chance to doubt.
Yeah.
So I think good eye contact, a firm handshake if they're offering their hand, and then just general.
Or hug. I always hug people.
In interviews, really?
Yeah, is that weird?
I don't know.
I guess maybe not in first interviews.
Yeah.
I guess it's like if I had talked to them for a while.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. I feel like...
Guys, don't think I'm weird.
No. I don't think you're weird. I'm like, okay, maybe.
I feel like I guess it's like later on when I feel like they're like friends and I'm like, they come in for like the in-person or something.
I don't know. I'm with physical stuff, and maybe this is again like just the years on me, I'm going to show my age a little bit, but I feel like the longer I'm in the workforce, the more I try to read other people's cues. And it's less about anything than just trying to make sure I'm putting people at ease, you know? So if they're coming in for a hug, I'm going to give them a hug.
Yeah. You're like, I'll match your energy.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay,
exactly.
Yeah, sorry. Now that I'm rethinking that, guys, I don't first interview hug. That is really weird. Rachel,
I'm not concerned. No, I'm not.
I'm not concerned. Later on in the interview process, I'm like, okay, this might be something. Okay.
No, it's fine. I think interviews are such a personal thing, too. It's like the way that, the way that people approach them, there's less about right and wrong and more about like what feels authentic to you. So I think, just trying to put your best foot forward. If you've gotten to the point of having an interview, it's a good sign.
Yeah.
So it's more about just underscoring your abilities and talking about your accomplishments. And I know if it's your first job, that might feel hard, but I think anything that you can speak to that displays leadership, that displays
hard work, problem solving,
all those things we talked about. And I think there's nothing wrong with having a bit of a spiel, if you will, a rehearsed kind of
I feel like pitch. I feel like everyone should have their pitch just like ready, because that's my favorite thing to do when I interview someone. I'm just like, tell me about yourself. Like, I have your resume. I can read like where you went to school, what your GPA is, like your previous job, if you had one. But like, how'd you get there? Why are you there?
Yeah.
And like, I feel like my favorite interviews or people that we've hired have literally been people that can really pitch themselves. Yeah. You know? That's like a skill that they have to have. So
yeah.
Practice your pitch.
Practice your pitch. And I think the other is like, be authentically yourself.
Yeah.
You can still make eye contact if you're a little more introverted. You don't have to, be a cheerleader if you're a quiet, academic or whatever. I think be yourself, but be your most confident self that you can be. Yeah.
The last tip I would say is research the company and who you're meeting with. That I'm always one flattered when someone comes to an interview and they're like, oh, I saw you're in Dallas, Texas on LinkedIn. I'm like, that's so creepy, but thanks for looking me up. or if they don't know anything about the brand, and so I'm talking about the brand and they're like, oh, you have this product, and you're like, come on. So definitely do your homework.
That's a good one.
Like, if you go into an interview, like, where's the person from? What do they like? What do they not like? Where are they from? What's the company they're running? Or what are you interviewing for? Like, I would say, like, especially when you're applying to jobs, like, probably quality over quantity. Mm-hmm. Like, just apply to the ones that you genuinely are interested in, and then spend your time like researching those instead of just like mass applying everywhere. Yeah. And like catering your resume to those specific jobs.
That's a really good tip to get interviews, making sure that you're reading the description. To your point on researching the company or the person that is interviewing you, I think this is not my tip, I didn't come up with this, but I definitely think about it every time I'm interviewing someone. An interviewer will always ask you, what are your questions for me?
Oh, yes.
And,
I'm so glad you
asked that. And honestly, you should have 3 good questions.
At least
3.
Red flag.
And not just like, what's the company culture?
Yeah.
Like, okay, yes, you can ask me that, but...
How long have you been at the company?
Yeah.
Like, you should see that on LinkedIn.
Right. Like, the more thoughtful and... the more thoughtful those questions are, the more that you can show me that you researched. Well, I saw on your Instagram that you guys have been doing a lot more UGC.
Yeah.
Can you tell me, is that part of your ongoing strategy, or is that, or what's driving that? You know? And obviously, like, the level of question can depend on the job and on who you're talking to, but the more that you can communicate that I've put time into this.
Yeah.
And I'm invested in this, the more the interviewer is going to probably start feeling attached to you.
I'm so glad. I should have even written that down, because I feel like that's my number one thing. When I say, like, I always leave out, or I try, like, 5 minutes at the end of the interview to be like, do you have any questions for me? And when they say, nope, that's it, I'm like, well, that's it for you.
Yeah, and scene.
Yeah, because I'm like, if they're not like willing to ask questions or like have done research on this call, then like, are they going to ask questions in their role? And like, anyway.
Yeah.
So glad you said that.
Super fair.
Any other tips for first interview impression tips before we move on?
Nope, I don't think so.
I think those were good ones.
Oh, okay, one more.
Okay, yes.
Anytime you're nervous.
Yeah.
So, because I feel like a lot of people, especially if you haven't been to a lot of interviews, you might have nerves before an interview. Yeah. The more prepared you are for whatever it is that's making you nervous, the less nervous you'll be.
True.
So again, going back to that research or whatever, maybe for you, it's the conversational part that makes you nervous. So get someone that you trust and practice.
Yeah, totally.
One thing I used to do to prepare for interviews early in my career, I would Google up top 25 interview questions. And then I would put it in a Word. I would copy and paste it, put it in a Word doc, and then I would type out all my answers to all those questions.
Totally. Now, even if they don't ask you them, it's just, like, good to have on hand, and, like, you can pull from them in other ways.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So that was just another one that helped me.
Which made me think of, even though I said I was done, my dad gave me this piece of advice, too, is to practice. So to do exactly that, but then practice in the mirror.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, stare at yourself in the mirror and practice, like, making eye contact with technically you're talking to yourself if you can't find like a friend, you know, but like how do you really sound and look and present, and if you're talking to yourself in the mirror, it's kind of a weird thing and you'll be like, why am I talking to myself in the mirror? But I feel like it really does help.
I've never done that. I'm going to try that one.
Really?
Now. Yeah. Okay. I'm going to go home and talk to myself in the mirror. My husband's going to be like, what are you doing?
Are you talking to yourself? Yeah. Okay. Next question that was submitted is, someone says, I want to do social media, but there isn't any job security there. ... What are your thoughts? Do you agree or disagree? I have a lot of thoughts.
I have a lot of thoughts, too. No offense to whoever wrote this question, but I really disagree. I think when I think about the teams I've been on and the people who have been in social media roles, those individuals have a very in-demand knowledge. But I think it's all about your approach, because the thing about social, and I've said this a lot and on every team I've been on probably in the last 10 years, is the minute you think you have social media figured out is the minute you begin to fail.
True.
Because it is a live and well, growing, you know, changing being. And so the name of the game is keeping your finger on the pulse. The name of the game is change. So if you're not a person if you don't like change, don't be in social media. If you like change and you like the constant challenge and kind of that never having it all figured out
which
aspect.
Which is a great but horrible feeling.
It is. But I think like there's another way to frame it, which is like, are you a very curious person?
Totally.
And if you are and you're inquisitive, I see you this way and you operate in this space, you know, and I think it's a perfect fit for you because you're always optimizing. You're always looking. You're kind of like looking around the corner. You're very future focused.
Yeah.
So I think that for those people, it's a very stable career because you're not just standing still doing the same thing or focusing on the same platform. I think just even in the time I've been here at PBG and with the brand Babe, we've gotten to shift a lot of our focus and resources from between social media platforms. But the people that are in those roles are exactly the same because they're on that journey with us and they're actually taking us on that journey. So yeah. I think there's actually an immense amount of security if you're doing it right.
Yeah. I feel like to your point, so much, but you just have so many good points. previously on like go somewhere and build something. If you can build like, yes, there's a ton of like social media people out there and admittedly a lot of them are very subpar, but if you can take a social media platform and build something with it, like you can do so much with that. And I started my career literally building social media platforms and now I've been able to do way more than just social media and I'm so grateful for that. I still love social media, but I think it is honestly, if you do it well, a very stable job career because they're, I don't want to say very high in demand, but kind of, because anybody can be a social media manager, but not anybody can do it well, in my opinion.
Yeah.
So, like, if you can do it well and really build something and be able to speak to how you're building it and why you're building it and always being, like, very intellectually curious, always asking questions, never being settled, being the same or, like, just doing the same thing, then you'll continue to, like, grow and learn and be able to build out way more than just social media. Or if you want to stay in social media, great. Like, you can just go into bigger brands or bigger accounts or whatever. So,
can I turn the tables on you and ask you a question?
Oh, fun.
So I have had some exposure to what you've accomplished here, and it's so impressive, and I think it's pretty rare. So, from my perspective, I think looking at it, it looks like you built something almost from nothing when it comes to the some of the programs that we're still operating today. So what advice do you have for someone who is in a role where they see an opportunity to build something from nothing? Like, what are some tips on how to do that?
Wow, I wasn't ready for the role.
Sorry, I'm just...
I wasn't ready for the role
we're
reversal.
We're riffing now.
Reversal. How do you build something from nothing? I think, well, one, if you're in a job that you don't, like, love, you're not obsessed with, like, that is a huge thing. I genuinely was so curious, passionate about Babe Lash, now Babe Original, at the time. Like, last year, it just seemed like the most amazing, like, astronomical, like, thing to me because it was new. It was, like, cutting edge. And I think that made it really easy for me because I was genuinely so passionate about it. And then I do think, kind of to what we were saying, I just got, like, really, really curious about it. And I started listening to every podcast I listened to. I signed up for every newsletter. I sat on every webinar. I, like, would message people on LinkedIn to meet with them to, like, understand their strategies. That kind of sounds weird. But I just, like, was really wanting to, like, learn. So, and I think, and I'm really lucky I had, like, the opportunity to, and no one at the time was really managing social and influencer, which is what I started doing. So, and I feel like I had to explain it to a lot of people, but because I was willing to learn and also be wrong and fail, like, I definitely, like, I've built up a lot of programs and accounts and stuff now, but I did a lot of things wrong. Like, and luckily at the time there wasn't, like, enough people probably to, like, catch me on it, but I did do stuff wrong, you know, but I learned from it and I was, like, willing to be wrong.
Yeah.
So I don't know if that
I love
answers
it.
Your
I love
question.
It. Have you ever heard that saying, fail fast?
Yes.
It's like, it's figure it out. Like, try to figure out as fast as you can that you're wrong and then do something different.
Yeah.
And then it's not a failure. It was a learning.
Yeah. So
love that.
If anybody is wanting to do social media but feels like there's no job security, we are your biggest advocates for doing social media.
We say do it.
I feel like we even said that in the part one episode too, because we were like, if you're trying to, like, build out some experience, but you're in school or, like, need to do something on the side, like, start a social media account, like, run a Pinterest account. Like, all of a sudden I'm getting all of these videos and TikToks about creating Pinterest accounts, apparently, which I don't know. Apparently you can, like, blow up with keywords and SEO stuff. I don't know. Have you seen that?
No, but I feel I've been hearing a lot about Snapchat. I feel like some of these other platforms that
diversify.
It's like these platforms are having a resurgence, which is really interesting.
Bring them back. Yeah, that's the other thing too. Like, if you could, like, I don't think any of our brands are doing Snapchat really well. So if you, like, start a Snapchat account and can build it or something, and you can go to a brand and be like, I built the Snapchat too. X followers, or I built this Pinterest too. X amount of views a month, whatever it is. So.
Yeah.
We love social media here.
We do. We talk about this all day.
I know. I'm like,
part
okay.
four.
Yeah. Part four. Okay, next questions. Strategies on keeping a good work-life balance.
Ooh, that is a loaded one.
Very loaded.
It is.
Lots of thoughts.
I actually love this question, but not for the reasons, you know, not for the typical answers. I think work-life balance is very much about what season of life you're in. And the definition of work-life balance really probably should change based on what your other priorities are. Mm-hmm. So I'll say early in my career, I definitely could have been classified as a little bit of a workaholic. Mm-hmm. Because number one, similar to you, I loved what I was doing. I was very passionate about it. I felt like
too
I was
passionate.
Yeah, too passionate. Transparently, I don't have a lot of regrets. I'll tell a little story. I don't have a lot of regrets. In general, I think it's a waste of energy. I just try to learn and move forward. I do have one regret that comes to mind around this topic, and it's that I have an aunt that I'm close to, and she was turning 50, and she had this big 50th birthday party, and it conflicted with a work event, and I did ask my boss if I could go to it, and the answer was kind of like a soft no. It was like, you need to be at the event. And so I did that. And, like, in the eternal perspective of things, I knew it was really important to her, and I still chose to please my boss over pleasing, you know, this family member that was going to be in my life for the rest
forever.
Of my life.
Yeah.
And not to make, you know, that I was actually one of the better bosses I ever had, so it's not a negative on her. I didn't explain to her how important it was to me. I didn't look for a solution. So, can I leave early? Can I come late?
Yeah.
You know, I just kind of took no for an answer on it, and And so I think to me, this is all about what phase of life are you in and what are your priorities? Like who needs you more right now? Yeah. I've talked in part one about having daughters. I think having kids for me really clarified this for me a lot also, because not only am I now wanting to be with them and wanting to spend as much of my non-working hours with them as I possibly can, but I also feel a really big responsibility to showing them what it should look like.
Yeah.
I don't want them to ever be able to say, you know, she cared more about work than she cared about being with us.
Yeah.
Or, you know, that, but at the same time, I want them to understand that my work and my job is what allows us a lot of the parts of our life that we really enjoy, and that it's also a part of me that I don't have to apologize for. So I think in summary, you have to just always be prioritizing, and I think you can put too much emphasis on work when there's personal family stuff going on. But the other side of that coin is that there is a phase for paying your dues. And I know people hate that saying, but it's true.
You gotta do it.
Yeah. And it's as much for you as it is for whatever company you're working for or whatever team you're on. It's proving to yourself that you can push through hard things and work hard and meet a deadline and all those other things that generally come along with that phase of your career.
Yeah. So I love like season of life. I feel like that's huge because there's different seasons of life where you can put in more time or energy. And then I do think though, like to your point on paying your dues, like you just have to pay them sometimes. And I don't think that's, and maybe people don't like that, but I don't think that's a bad thing. And I think I, for the first couple years of my careers, was working double, quadruple some of my friends or like peers or people around me. But because you're working that much, then you can like grow so much faster, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, and if that's not a priority to you, then that's fine. Yeah. Like have your work-life balance and just like work your however many hours a week that feels good and like go out with your friends. But if you are trying to like accomplish something, like, yes, you do get a lot more done if you're working 120 hours a week than you are 20, you know?
Right.
So but you can't work 120 hours a week your whole life, always, ever, because you're going to run yourself into the ground. But it just depends on your seasons and priorities. But do it while you're younger, because
get it in. I get the work in, get the hours in, and again, like invest in that professional reputation. It's going to be with you for a long time. So
it is. It just follows you. Okay. Sorry. We have so many more questions, but not that much time. Okay. How do you thrive in your career, and what would you tell your 20-year-old self? I love asking people what they'd tell their 20-year-old self.
Oh, that's a good one. So how do I thrive? How do you thrive in your career?
You can also pick your favorite.
Okay.
Or you can answer both.
I'll answer them both, but I'll try to be concise.
Okay.
How do you thrive in your career? I think one thing I've been doing more recently that has helped me a lot is asking myself, I do it when I'm walking through the parking garage. For some reason, that's my trigger.
Okay,
I ask myself, who do I need to show up for today, and what does that look like?
I love that.
And it gets me really focused on serving the team instead of on myself. And sometimes I need to show up for the people that are on my team. Sometimes I need to show up for my peers. Most days I need to show up for all of the above. I need to show up for my boss.
Yeah.
And, you know,
do you ever have to show up for yourself?
Absolutely. That's a great question. Sometimes I do need to show up for myself, and recognizing that and being – whether that means – making sure I have the time to prepare for something that's important, or whether that means leaving at a certain time for something in my personal life that's important, just kind of setting those intentions, I think is great. What would I tell my 20-year-old self? Man, I think I would tell her that there's so much to learn, and it might not look how you think it'll look, but it might look better.
I love that.
And I think at that age, it's really easy to feel afraid.
Mm-hmm.
Or there's so much unknown.
Mm-hmm.
But I think if I could have gotten to a belief earlier that it was all going to be okay and it was all going to work out, and spent less of the time in my maybe 20s and even some of my 30s feeling anxious mm-hmm. about the future and just had a trust in God and in the fact that everything's worked out to this point, it's yeah. probably going to keep working out.
Totally.
And I think if I could have taken that perspective a little earlier, I wonder, you know, what that would have changed. But like I said before, I'm not a regrets person.
Yeah.
No regrets.
No regrets, guys. But I will say I agree. And I feel like I've asked like other successful people like yourself and they're just like, my life looks nothing like I had thought, but it's better.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And so, like, you can't, like, I mean, it's always great to have a plan. I'm not telling anyone to not have, like, dreams or, like, visions or something. Like, definitely have those and, like, work towards those. But, like, what's in store for you is greater than you probably even know or have seen. Mm-hmm. So, like, trust the process.
Trust the process.
I love that. Okay. Next kind of section we'll go quickly through is just like questions around pivoting both your career, your major, like schools, whatever it might be. What would your best advice be on how to pivot? Someone asked that sometimes they feel pressure to have it all figured out on the first try. What would your advice be?
Ooh, let that go immediately.
Yeah.
I've heard
you don't succeed, try again.
That's right.
Or what'd you say? Like 5 minutes ago?
Oh, I don't know.
Fail fast.
And don't be afraid to suck at something.
Yeah.
I think...
Not everyone can be good at everything.
Well, and almost no one's good at something the first time they try it.
True.
You know, and I think that is realizing that and kind of...
Even if they say it was their first time, it probably wasn't.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, I think there's a lot of things that I'm not naturally good at and a lot of those... Mm-hmm. Some of those things I've decided it's not worth trying to be good at, and some of those things... I have decided it's worth investing the time to improve and just having the thoughtfulness to decide which is which. But I don't think anyone should have it figured out on the first try. We're not perfect.
Yeah.
We're learning. So I think
that's why we're all here.
Exactly. I think best advice on how to pivot and, you know, changing careers or changing majors goes back to really having spent some time setting your goals and setting your priorities, and then you can bump what you're doing up against that bar and ask yourself, is this getting me closer to where I want to go? Is this getting me knowledge that's going to help me down the road? You know, one thing that's interesting about my career getting to this point, you know, I'm a brand president now. It's like I told you last time, something I don't know that I necessarily saw for myself earlier in my career. I think my big goal was to get to be a VP.
Surpass.
And the reason for that is a funny story. I had gone to a conference and it was all male VPs in the company I was working for, and I was just kind of like enraged by this. I was like, I will be a female VP. Yeah. Like, I'm going to do this. So it was more just a arbitrary goal.
I love that.
But my path here...
Can do anything.
Yeah, that's right. Head. Yeah, that's right. And my path here... involved a ton of pivots. I was in sales, and then I pivoted to marketing, and then I pivoted to salon operations, and then I pivoted to doing salon operations and leading Sephora inside JCPenney, and then I pivoted to this brand president. And until I got to this role, I even had people come up to me and comment and say, wow, you just really like to start over, don't you? I had someone tell me that.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And
speaking of people with weird comments sometimes.
Weird comment, yeah. And
like, I do, actually. I learned a lot doing it. Thank
you. It caught me off guard. I was like, wow, so are people looking at my career and thinking, like, what is she doing?
But I think all that experience led you to where you are today.
Exactly.
Obviously.
And so I had to have a little bit of an internal conversation with myself. Well, do I care what that guy said? Like, do I care what he thinks, or do I care that I'm on a path that God's put me on? Do I care that I'm on a path that I feel is taking me in the direction that I want to see my career go and teaching me the things that I want to learn? Like, what do I care more about? What some random person, you know, says to me in a snarky passing conversation, or the value that I put in the lessons I'm learning?
Yeah.
And I think it's an easy, easy choice.
Yeah. I feel like pivoting is a great thing. I haven't done it a lot, so I have no real great advice other than I feel like if you feel like you need to or want to, the worst thing you can do is just not doing it, you know?
So yeah.
Just like doing it quicker and like figuring it out sooner than like later, instead of just like agonizing over like, what should I do, or how do I change, or what do I do different? Like, just change it. And if it doesn't work, you can always go back. That's like the worst case scenario.
Exactly.
Okay. Someone said, I love my job that doesn't pay well, and I don't like the job that does. Help.
Ooh, that's a tough one.
That is a tough one.
I feel like I need more information.
I know, we're like, can you get, like,
yeah,
background?
Can you tell me what this is that we're talking about?
How much pay?
Yeah, what industry?
Yeah.
One thing, as I was thinking about, you know, as I think about this question, I think I'm going to use an example of a job that's really important that I think typically doesn't pay very well, and let's say a teacher.
Yeah.
You know, teachers do really hard jobs. I would be a terrible teacher of children.
It'd be hard.
Yeah. But say you're a teacher and you aren't making the kind of money that you want, but you love teaching. How can you take that same skill set and apply it differently? And maybe it's a side hustle. Maybe it's a change from what you're doing. Could you start a tutoring company?
Totally.
Could you? And so I think it's about
start a social media account where you're like teaching the same things.
Or,
I don't know.
Yeah, exactly. Where you're sharing your lesson plans.
Yeah.
So I think it's about getting creative with whatever it is that you know, whatever your industry is. And so that's one option. I think another is, have you asked for a raise? Have you done research to see what your job should pay?
Like maybe you are getting underpaid or something.
Exactly. Yeah. And I'm never one to encourage people to ask for a raise when they started a job and 6 months ago or when, you know, just because they need more money. We could do a whole other one on asking for a raise because I have a lot of thoughts on
that.
Yeah,
what are your thoughts on that?
I think quickly it's about – number one, doing your research and understanding what the market rate is for a job. If you haven't taken the time to do that, I promise you your employer will. And your numbers are probably going to look better than theirs, just judging by how that normally works. I think that's part of it. Do your research and come in with the facts. No one ever, this is going to sound cold-hearted, but I'm just going to say it straight. No one wants to hear about how expensive your life is or how you need more money.
Oh,
a raise is never about your need for more. It's about the value.
Agree. I didn't know what you were going to say. I was like, oh, no. But yeah.
Oh, no.
That would be weird.
Yeah,
Do people say that?
Oh, yeah. Like, a lot of times asking for raises, people will be like, well, my rent went up, you know, or it's like, that's not why you get a raise. You get a raise
even
because,
if that is true.
Yeah.
Don't disclose.
Yeah, yeah. That's not the part that you want your boss or the decision maker focused on. It needs to be about, here is all the value that I'm offering to the company, and I want to make sure that my compensation
matches that, and
I continue to
add value.
Yeah,
Love. So, any other advice on loving your job that doesn't pay well? And not liking the job that does.
I don't know who you are or what's important to you, but I will also say money is not everything.
True.
So I think you need to have for some people it is. For some people are money motivated. If you are, it sounds like you are. Nothing wrong with wanting to chase more and wanting abundance in your life. That's great.
But then maybe you have to just find something else that neither options are good at the moment. And you need to find something else that pays well and you like.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. I think it's about getting creative.
Okay, next job is thinking of switching majors. Help in all caps. That was in all caps.
Ooh.
I don't want to make the wrong decision.
It sounds like you're not sure yet. Yeah. And I wouldn't make a change until you feel a little more sure. Because I think making a change, I'm always for people making a change if something isn't working for them. And if you have a level of confidence and you feel like this is not for me and this other thing is. But I think you really need to examine your reasons, examine why it's not working, and make sure that what you're thinking of switching to is not just going to be the same problem from a different point of view.
Yeah, for sure.
So I think if you're not sure, then I would pause.
Yeah.
And take a minute.
Yeah, take a semester off, do an internship or something. Also, so basic, but always make a pros and cons list. I was in college my major was journalism, and it took me like a while to take like all the prerequisites for it. And then finally I like applied, got in. I went to like my first day of classes. It took me like almost 2 years. And I was like, wait, I hate this. Like, why am I in journalism? So then I like hurried and went to the marketing like department because I had been doing a bunch of marketing internships. And I was like, how can I switch my major? And they outlined, you know, the way to switch my major and all the prereqs that I have to take. And it would have added on like 2 more years of school and money and time. And so I just had, I did a simple, very basic pros and cons list. Like, is it worth X amount of money, X amount of time, like retaking all these classes? And I might not even get into the major. Hopefully I would have. But I was like, was it worth it? And to me, it wasn't worth it because instead I've gotten 2 years of working, like real life experience where I've gotten paid instead of like paying for like a degree. But sometimes if you like, I don't know, I'm trying to think of an example. If you're studying English, but you potentially want to be an engineer, like, you can't get experience for that. So you definitely should switch your major.
Definitely switch your major. Yeah, exactly. So, I love that. I love the whole, like, what are all the constraints and is it worth it and pros and cons. And another thing, we talked about this in part one, don't be afraid to seek some counsel.
Totally.
And maybe it's not just, maybe you even go beyond someone that you know. And if it's 2 very distinct career paths like that, can you find someone that's doing both of those jobs and go talk to them about what the day-to-day is like and try to get a sense for where you're going to be happier or where you're going to thrive and natural, you know, whether it's you're naturally good at it or whether it's something you really are curious to learn.
So
I would not rush that decision because I think you don't want to switch your major twice if you can help it. And so I understand the pressure. But seek some counsel, do a little bit of an analysis and take it from there.
Yeah. And to your point of like asking people, my major before journalism, I was wanting to do strategic communication, I think was the major, because I wanted to go to law school, which is funny because that would have been horrible because I thought I wanted to go to law school and it seemed like a great idea. But once I started talking to people that were lawyers in my life or that I like had reached out to, like, they either A, didn't like it, or B, loved it, and they were like, do you love reading? And I was like, I hate to say I don't love reading.
Yeah.
And so that's when I was like, okay, well, I probably don't want to be a lawyer.
And you maybe wouldn't have caught that if you hadn't talked to those people.
Like, yeah. Ooh. So definitely recommend, agree, that you just, like, need to reach out to those people that, like, if you are pivoting careers or, like, majors, to reach out to them. Always the That Girl Guide Instagram is open to the DMs.
Yes.
If I can help, but I don't know if I can. The ones I can. Okay. Very, very last question before we close. What is your advice on switching job or roles generally, and when is the right time?
Yeah.
We kind of talked about it a
lot. We did a little bit. Yeah, one aspect of this we didn't really talk about, and this is something, this is maybe not the way people look at their careers today, but I think it's worth considering, is the part on switching roles versus switching companies. And I think you've done a great job of this. I think that the first 10 years of my career, except for that one stint where I left and worked for a different brand for 1.5 years, were all at the same company, but I did 3 or 4 different jobs. And so I think part of that goes back to, it's not necessarily about leaving the company you're at, and especially if you have built a good professional reputation, you have a reputation for working hard and being a hustler, companies want to keep good people. And so if you're starting to feel like those scales of learning and are offering value or getting off balance in where you're just kind of losing your passion or not feeling fully engaged, before you look outside, go talk to someone who you trust in a leadership role in the company you're at and say, hey, you know, here's how I'm feeling, and I'm wondering if there are any other opportunities that you could think of for me. Or even at one point, so when I went from manager to director, I actually found, like, I was thinking about the business and went to the VP. So it was my boss's boss. I got her blessing. I said, hey, I have this idea of a role that I want to pitch. And she said, yeah, like, I'll help you get the meeting. So number one, like, amazing person who supported
me. Go to your manager first.
Yeah. Don't go around your manager. Yeah. But I think she knew I was ambitious and I didn't want her job, and she didn't want me taking her job or trying, not that I could have, but you know what I'm saying? And so she was very eager to help me, which I owe her for, because this all could have ended very differently.
Yeah.
But I went to her, I said, hey, I have this idea. I want to pitch it to the VP. I was 6 months pregnant with my first daughter. I drove from Austin to Dallas for this 30-minute meeting I had with this VP.
Wow, I love that.
And I pitched him a job description that I said I wanted, that we need this and I want to do it. And he kind of laughed and was like, well, no, we're not going to do that. But we have a marketing director role opening up, and I would put your name in the hat for it if you would move to Dallas or Dallas area from Austin. And so, like I mentioned, I was pregnant. I was 3 months away from having my daughter and had no intentions of moving. But now here I've asked for this opportunity. And I have a really incredible husband who decided together as a family we were going to take this risk and do this for the chance for me to learn, for the chance for me to get to that next level. And that never would have happened if I hadn't been thinking, even though it didn't, and again, going back to it, doesn't always look how you think it will, but just
it's totally different. It's not at all what you had asked for, but
not at all. It was something better. And it actually required a pretty big sacrifice on my part to get what I wanted, because I didn't want to move at that time.
Yeah.
Now we've been here 10 years. We love it. And it's right where we're supposed to be. But in that moment, it was not an easy choice. But I think the point of all that is that there, when you have initiative and you work hard and you go about things in a way that is virtuous, or you're trying to follow the process and be respectful, and but you're hungry and you're ambitious, people generally will want to help you. I love to help ambitious people, because I feel like that's not something to ever hold against someone.
Yeah, that's true. I love that. Well, I love all of your thoughts and insights, and I'm so grateful and lucky that I get to work with you almost every day. But I still got to learn more on this episode. So hopefully we answered all of your guys' questions, and hopefully this was helpful and insightful. But as always, if you have questions or any other things that you want us talking about, feel free to message the That Girl Guide. And thanks for listening, and thanks for coming on, Rachel.
Thanks for having me. It was a blast.